Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 354 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyring, your host once again. And today my guest is Matthew Kerbis. Now, Matthew is an attorney outside of, or actually in downtown Chicago. And he recently went solo after spending some time in the litigation world in, a bigger law firm. And he has launched his solo practice based entirely off of the subscription model. And what's really interesting about his approach is he has envisioned the provision of legal services in much the same way as, say, a gym would provide services to their members, a base fee and then extras added on, so to speak. I'll let him explain more of that to you in the podcast episode. But it's a really intriguing approach to how to structure both your firm and your pricing model that heretofore, I think not too many people have explored. And Matthew is going to be speaking on the subject of the upcoming ABA Tech Show in Chicago in the beginning of March. So if you want to get a little more formalized view of his approach to the subscription model, be sure to go to the ABA Tech Show and check that out. So without any further delay, here is Matthew Kerbis. Matthew Kerbis, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
I'm so happy to be here, Neil. Thanks for having me.
I am pretty stoked to have you on the podcast today, Matthew. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm a Chicago area attorney. I study law at DePaul in Chicago and continue to get my first job and second job and third job working for other lawyers while in the city. And then about 8 years into my practice, decided I needed to do things differently and decided to leave and join the Great Resignation, if you will, and start my own law firm in March of 2022. And this podcast definitely played a role in my decision to leave and go solo and be a law entrepreneur.
Well, that's very flattering to hear. I think a lot of people had a lot of time on their hands during the pandemic, and we can tell by our download numbers that the podcast was one way that they spent their time. And so I'm happy to hear that it did have some influence in your decision to open your own practice. Without revealing too many details or, that you don't want to share, what were some of the things that motivated you to go into a solo practice?
Well, I think the pandemic played a really big role, right? Because it took client expectations and completely changed them. The old dynamic was attorneys are really expensive. And so when I go to meet with my attorney in person, they need to have a real nice office. They need to have, mahogany desks and really comfortable chairs and a really fancy space, because I'm paying them a premium, because I also don't go to a lawyer until I have a problem. So they can charge a premium. But the pandemic sort of changed client perspectives on, hey, I don't need to take a day off work to go meet with my lawyer or go to court. This is Zoom thing. Now everyone all of a sudden had Zoom on their phone or computer or some competitor, and client expectations changed. And with that, law firms had to adapt. And certainly the firm that I was at did, but we were primarily a litigation firm, even though I was building a transactional book of business. And I wanted to keep building that transactional book. And it's hard to grow a practice within a practice, especially when it's practicing law very differently, just from litigation to transactional, let alone billable hour to what I wanted to do with which was the subscription model. So with adoption of technology on the client side and the law firm side sort of being forced, I thought, well, there has to be a better way. And I already kind of been thinking about the subscription model before the pandemic, but I didn't really start talking about it or deep diving into research until the pandemic kicked off, where I even scheduled a meeting and got to meet with Kim Bennett, who I know appeared on your podcast too. And so I just sort of synthesized all these different resources together of how to launch my own solo practice based on the subscription model, and decided I had to go for it. Of course, I wouldn't have done it if my wife didn't have a really good corporate gig with benefits, right? I would have maybe found another way, but I have that backstop, thankfully, and a supportive spouse, and so I was able to give it a go.
Well, and you were really trying to accomplish a Herculean feat by, you know, remaining a litigator with a billable hours requirement during the day and creating a transactional practice at the same time. You know, it brings back that old adage that attorneys just have to only work, you know, a half day. The challenge is to figure out which 12 hours that's going to be. You know? So I'm sure that work-life balance has a lot to do with the decision-making.
It played a huge factor. Also, my becoming a parent during the pandemic was a big part of
that. Like you didn't have enough of a challenge.
Right. So
you have to add a kid in there as well.
Right. So picture this. My partner and I are living in a one-bedroom apartment in Chicago, and now it's a pandemic shutdown, and we're stuck in that one-bedroom apartment, and we can't use, you know, the pool or the weight room or any of the facilities, right? We're just stuck in that room. And then we find out we're pregnant a month into the pandemic. So like, we got pregnant when the pandemic started. So my kid's whole life will always be a measure of the pandemic. And now we're pregnant at the same time that we're trying to figure out how to work from home and how are we going to get groceries and how are we going to do all these things. You know, thankfully being in the city, we had a grocery store right across the street. So that problem solved itself pretty quickly. But this forced quick adaptation to this new lifestyle, I think also did kind of help me realize what was possible. And then my kid was a little over a year old when I actually did leave the firm to start my own practice. So it didn't happen immediately, but I began to realize once she was in daycare that things happen. And when both spouses are working, it's hard to leave work and go pick up your kid if there's an emergency. And litigation simply doesn't allow for that because you have to be in court, even if it's Zoom court, you know, you can't miss the hearing, right?
Right.
So litigation just was not going to be an option for me if I wanted to be an involved parent in my child's life. And while I certainly work equal, if not more hours from when I was working for another firm, I control my hours and I control my time. And since I don't bill by the hour, you know, if there's a day where I can't quite get as much productive, deep work done, I'm still making money.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really key. And the recognition that that's possible, I think, is the single biggest factor that's changing the legal landscape, both from the provider and from the client point of view. I mean, I had clients who said to me they very much prefer the virtual model, brought on in large part by the pandemic. When I was virtual before the pandemic, but still, because they didn't, as you said, didn't want to take the time off from work, come into the office, didn't want to have to arrange for childcare for their children. And when I said, well, how about if I come to you? That was an option. And no, then I have to clean the house. I still got to find somebody to watch the kid. And, I think the whole expectation, at least on that side, the transactional side largely, has completely changed and will never go back, in my humble opinion. Now, I loved litigating. You know, there were lots of things about being in court that I really liked, but being tied down to the court schedule was not one of them.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And there is, I can't remember the judge's name right now, but I know there is a judge out there who like uses Calendly to get things on his calendar, which are times that are available. You know, like I use Calendly and I use the scheduling app, you know, that you use to schedule this podcast interview, right? And to see a judge use that for his courtroom is amazing, because that does sort of take away some of the restrictions on your own schedule. So there is potential even for litigators in the future if other judges follow this judge's
lead. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm encouraged by the fact that a lot of court sessions transition to Zoom. In family law, I could never understand why we had to go in for a 10-minute, status hearing. It took me longer to tie my tie than some of these hearings, lasted. Why couldn't we do that over Zoom? And I'm happy to see a lot of that is still the case, and disappointed in some scenarios where courts are going back in person hearings, when obviously it's much better to have an in-person trial and a significant hearing. But there's some, as you know, as a former litigator, there's so many things that could be done, essentially over the phone.
Yeah. It reminds me, though, of the moral of the poem If by Rudyard Kipling, which essentially comes down to balance in all things. And sometimes, certainly, there are going to be situations where an in-court appearance makes more sense, right? But having that just be optional, only in the event that it's actually necessary, right, is where you can allow for the balance. So, there were hearings that I lost on Zoom that I think I might have won in person during the pandemic, so it's give and take.
Yeah, there's that for sure. So you mentioned Kimberly Bennett. She is a patent attorney out of Atlanta, I believe, or pretty close to Atlanta, Georgia. She was a guest on the program back in episode 156. For those of you who are keeping track, that was, I think, like in April of 2009, so that predated, the pandemic. And we talked then. She's, I think, what I refer to as the queen of the subscription model. And so, maybe we have to come up with a new moniker for you, the prince of the subscription model, or something along those lines.
I beat you to it in that I call myself the subscription attorney now.
Well, I was just going to say, in terms of branding, I think you actually checked in on that. The name of the firm is The Subscription Attorney, LLC, right?
Yeah, just without the. It's just Subscription Attorney, LLC. But at least on my LinkedIn, when I go out on places, when my name's Matthew Kirbis, I'm the Subscription Attorney. Yeah. And so I certainly gave Kim and I gave Jess Birkin the opportunity to claim that title first, because they were really pioneers in the subscription model before me. And I'm not sure if Kim does patent stuff. I know she does IP stuff. She's definitely she pioneered the subscription model for trademarks specifically, because when you look at where can you adapt that model to a legal practice, that makes the most sense, frankly, right? You're like, if you're a trademark attorney, you're protecting your client's brand continuously. Like, how many cease and desist letters do you probably need to send as a trademark attorney, right?
Sure.
If they're a business, they're maybe developing more brands and filing for more trademarks. So like, it makes the most sense there. And Kim really broke a lot of barriers for the model with she was doing with trademarks. And I kind of took that and adapted things that just SaaS companies, software as a service companies were doing, and tried to come up with a model that worked for everyday people and a general practice. Now, I do plan at some point in the future to maybe niche down into whatever area seems to have the most need, but it was never really done in that broad of a scope before. So that's my contribution to the subscription model in the profession, is trying to find a way to make it work for everyday people and small business owners who simply can't afford the billable hour.
Well, we've kind of jumped ahead of ourselves here. So let's kind of backtrack and set the tone a little bit. So your practice now, when you went out on your own, you decided to focus exclusively or pretty much exclusively on the subscription model. What were some of your ideas as to why that would be the right approach for you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a really good question. You know, I think having constraints is important. And when I developed this model, I did it within a litigation firm, like sort of with the idea that I would be doing this in supplement to my litigation work. Because when, while I ended up leaving the firm, they were very open-minded to me doing this. So, I mean, it was a really great relationship with, you know, that I had with them, but it was just too hard. So some of my initial framework, which is maintained, really was also formed around having to set up barriers to clients contacting me all the time and dealing with emergency situations, because I simply couldn't afford to do that if I had to be in court a lot of my day. But I've still kept up those barriers. So for example, I only allow my entry-level subscribers at $20 a month to book time with me in 15-minute increments only at the end of my day. Right now, it's between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. And so that doesn't mean they can't message me in the client portal or hire me for some add-on services that aren't included with their subscription, but it allows me to create boundaries so that I'm not handling emergencies and I only let clients book calls with me within about a 24-hour period. Really, I think I set it to like 18 hours in Calendly. So that way I could always plan out my next day. If somebody needs an emergency, like, oh, legal services is an emergency, I'm simply not going to be a good fit. There are plenty of attorneys out there that they could go to hire in case of an emergency. So that's not really what I'm doing. I'm more a prophylactic, right? Like, I help people avoid legal problems than wait until they have big ones to solve. So that's part of it. And the other reason why I chose $20 a month, really $19.99 on my website, is because I looked at other markets. I looked at, okay, what are people paying right now for Netflix, for Amazon Prime, for Calendly, right? For all these other apps that they're using. I want to be able to compete with that at a minimum to give people actual legal advice, like something that's of actual value. So that's sort of why I picked that price point. I don't think I can do it for any less. I certainly don't make money on just those clients. I'm hoping and expecting, and I've seen over the last 9-10 months, that if somebody's calling me or scheduling a meeting with me to talk to me, then they have some other issue. And sometimes I could resolve it for them during our Zoom meetings. Sometimes I could resolve it through my client portal if they message me. But when I can't, or when they have like a one-page contract that their dog groomer or whirly ball or some event is making them sign, they want me to review it, well, then I charge them my flat fee available to subscribers, which is $50 a page, right? So like, I am getting more work from these subscribers. I wouldn't be able to just make money on $20 a month. Because when I tell that to lawyers, sometimes they're like, well, you're giving away the farm. You know, like, what are you doing there? The point is, they're calling me. They're contacting me. I'm their lawyer. They're not going to other lawyers, because other lawyers might charge them, or they might say, oh, a free consultation. But like, you can't give legal advice in a free consultation. There's no attorney-client relationship. So, I really have lowered the friction and the barrier to legal advice for my clients. You know, I won't give you a free consultation. I'll do a free 15-minute introductory call to see if it's a good fit. You could schedule that right on the first page of my website. And I got one of those this morning. I get maybe 4 or 5 of them a week. They don't all turn into clients. And some of them are from Portland or places where I'm not licensed, right? But I make it really easy to schedule an intro call with me. And I'm very clear in the scheduling link that there's no legal advice given. This is just to see if it's a good fit. And then if it is a good fit, they could easily sign up with me. And it's only $20 a month, and it's month to month. If they don't like it, they can unsubscribe. And the reason I wanted to make it real easy for people to subscribe and unsubscribe is to lower that friction and that pain point. And then they've already have an account with me. So if they unsubscribe, they could always sign back in to the client portal, and the automation I've set up will immediately prompt them to pay to resubscribe. So they get their legal services, they unsubscribe, another issue comes down the road, they already have the login information. They could go back and sign in and message me in the client portal or schedule something with me on my calendar. So I try to make it easy to subscribe and unsubscribe. Whether or not that changes in the future, I don't know. But right now, I think that I like that design choice.
No, I think it's absolutely brilliant. And one of the things that really intrigues me is that, you know, for years, I've heard attorneys say, well, you know, the practice of law is not like making widgets, not like I'm, you know, selling a product. And I disagree. I think you are selling a product, which is information, or the product might be documents that affect some outcome, or the product might be
your expertise in reviewing something. You're always selling a product or a service.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the idea of thinking of the provision of legal services in the same kind of mindset as logging into Netflix or, you know, signing up for membership at the gym.
Right.
You know, and I think that's a really good analogy, if I might say so myself. You know, you have a monthly fee at the gym, but if you want personal training, you're going to schedule a personal trainer through the gym, because why would you go outside the gym? They're offering them right there. Or if you want to take some extra classes that are premium classes, you're going to pay a premium additional fee for that. And you're going to do that all because you're already a member of the gym.
Bingo. Yeah.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, Lexaclara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's 5 or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to onceHub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
And to take your analogies even a little further, you know, let's say I really want to watch a show, but it's only on Peacock. I don't want to subscribe to Peacock forever, right? Because I only would want to watch this one show. So I wait until the season is up. I subscribe to Peacock. I binge watch it, and then I unsubscribe. But then maybe in the future, there's another show that's on Peacock that I really want to watch, right? And maybe eventually you just stay subscribed to Peacock. Well, the equivalent of that for me would be somebody needs a simple estate plan. I don't just give anyone a simple estate plan. I still have to do my due diligence, right? If someone has a child with special needs and you need a special needs trust and all that, I don't do that. I refer that out to other attorneys, right? So if the simple estate plan that I offer works for my clients and that's all they want, I only offer it to subscribers. So they have to subscribe first. Let's say they subscribe, they get their simple estate plan and they unsubscribe. That's the binging equivalent, right? Mm-hmm. But in the future, they might need a real estate closing. And they know I do that because I make sure I'm providing additional value than just the one reason they hire me. And then they'll come back and they'll, use me for the real estate closing, and eventually they'll just stay subscribed. But the gym analogy is, you might go to the gym because you want to get in shape for the new year, so the timing is appropriate for this conversation, right? And you go to the gym every week for the first month because you're trying to rush it and try to get in shape, and you feel maybe good for that first month, but then you unsubscribe or you stop going, you know, because you can't keep it up or you don't want to. But binge working out isn't going to be healthy for you. And so if you want good physical health, just like you want good legal health, you need to commit to that long term. And it's part of what I'm trying to do when I do have clients who subscribe is show them that and show them what that looks like and how, yes, it's true that if something happens at work and you're even only paying me $20 a month, you know, I will be able to counsel you on what's happening. And that's included as long as we could kind of handle it in a 15-minute conversation. And if we can't, schedule another 15-minute conversation, right? And so that's, you know, letting people know that, you know, things happen at work. You have a contractor come over to your home and maybe they need to have you sign a contract, or they're not, which is maybe even more concerning, right? So, you know, things happen throughout our lives that we think we should handle on our own, in part because lawyers are too expensive. Why would I pay a lawyer $250 an hour to ask a question that can be handled in 5 minutes? It doesn't make any sense, but it does on the subscription model.
Yeah, and maybe you've got to this point already, but I can also see extending that analogy to your software subscriptions that we use all the time in the legal business, or services that we subscribe to operate our law firms. There's different tiers. There's an entry-level tier, and then a mid-level tier, and then a professional tier, and the price goes up and the options increase. Do you see the subscription model taking on that form as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I highly encourage all your listeners to go on my website to see how I've handled that. Also, all my pricing available on my website.
So you've already done that.
Yeah, but I'll be happy to explain how I did it and why I did it. Because if you just if you go on the website and look at it, you might not fully appreciate the context, because I've built, as a lawyer, because I've built it for the client journey. So on my first page, it just says, here's where I am. Subscription start at $19 a month. Schedule an intro call or learn more. And they can click on the tabs that bring them to different places, but I try to focus in on that. So either schedule a call or learn more. If they click on the learn more button, they'll see my three buckets, because you don't want to show people, not just potential clients, but at most people in most situations, the psychology has been done, the research has been done, more than three options at a time. Any more than that, and it gets too
confusing. It's overwhelming.
So three buckets: individuals, freelancers, or business owners. So if you fall into one of those three categories right away, I'm saying, okay, these are going to show you the subscription options, the packages that I've already built that make the most sense for you. So then when you go on each of those, whichever bucket applies to you, because frankly, there's a huge boom in the gig economy. I'm a solo practitioner, a true solo. I identify with freelancers and solopreneurs because I am one, essentially. So I love serving freelancers. And so that's why they're also a bucket there. But whenever you click on one of those, it only shows you two or three options of which subscription packages make the most sense for you. And it explains, you know, what's included in those packages, right? And then when you're on those pages, there is a link to show you all of my fees for all of the things that you get access to as a subscriber, further explanation of, in terms of like what I would normally charge for a contract or for sexual harassment prevention training. Even though it's included in your package, you could see what I charge for that a la carte, available only to subscribers. So that's where I have all my fees listed. I don't know, I've seen one other attorney that actually lists all their fees on their website, but also my engagement agreements on my website too, because I want clients to be able to read it and I want other lawyers to see it and see how I've done it. Now, I've adapted it for my jurisdiction, my state, the state of Illinois, make sure it's ethically compliant with, you know, with your state, and what is and isn't an earned fee needs to be well defined, usually in all jurisdictions. Now, obviously, this isn't legal advice. Consult ethics counsel in your state, but that's all there. And so I try to make it as easy as possible for somebody to find the subscription that works for them and sign up for it. And they don't even need to talk to me. They could just sign up. I do run a conflicts check, and I say that in my engagement agreement. You could sign up and even make your payment but I still need to run my conflicts check. And if you don't pass, I refund your payment in full. Yeah. Right. And so like I, as a new business owner though, who used to do insurance defense work, I'm not getting a lot of conflicts. So it does, you know, I could pretty quickly, like conflicts check doesn't take a very long time for me, at least at this stage in my solo practice career, since I pivoted from litigation to transactional. But that's the way I have it set up. And yeah, I automate everything that I can.
So you have three different levels, and in each level you have two or three different grades, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So it gives you a lot of flexibility of the client, in particular, of finding, you know, which grade and which level best meets your needs. And then you can see how each of the tasks that are provided in that subscription service, how they would normally be priced individually. So you understand how you've arrived at that monthly fee. Mm-hmm. That's pretty well thought out, I have to admit. I can see where it's a model that could be used in a lot of different ways. But it does raise the question, is there an ideal client for this type of approach? And I'll guess I'll answer my own question first and then give you a chance to respond. It seems to me that business clients who have an ongoing need would be, you know, perfect candidates for this approach. Entrepreneurs, you know, to the extent that they're different from, you know, a business client, that have varying needs as they bring their product or service to market and expand. Those are the things that come to mind initially. Are you seeing that and more, or something completely different?
No, you hit the nails on the head with those potential clients, right? And I do have those clients. I also should say that I am flexible. So like I have two of my clients don't squarely fit into one of my packages. And so I've made a custom subscription pricing for them that is different than what's listed on my website, based upon, you know, whatever scoped amount of work, you know, we anticipate for them. And we have a 6-month review and an annual review to make sure the pricing still makes sense. So, you know, and they could also, it's month to month. I do not commit any client to more than that. Even though we have these reviews on the calendar, that's sort of like a soft commitment, but it's not a contractual engagement that they stay subscribed for that amount of time. And those are business clients because they're also thinking a little bit more about their business. They keep good records. They've looked at their legal spend in the past. And for those clients, they are pivoting from billable hour firms to me. And so that's sort of how they know what their spend has been and why we're able to significantly reduce that for them, with the understanding too that I'm using legal tech and automation, and I haven't gotten there yet, but eventually I'll probably outsource to freelance attorneys as well. I have really no plan.
I was just going to ask you that, because I could also see how your subscription could provide as a back office solution for somebody who needs, you know, work throughout the month, but not on necessarily a steady basis, but just wants to know they have somebody they can turn to whatever they do need.
Yeah, I think they're the only firm I know that's really doing that for sure. There are some that are actually marketing that they do this, but the one that comes to mind right now, I think, is Marble Law. I think they do something like that where they provide the back office. You're of counsel with them, so you're not, it's kind of like a franchised model, you know? You could still have your own practice, but you're also affiliated with Marble Law. So like they do something like that. So potentially in the future, yes, I could do that using the client portal software that I use. I opted to not go with legal tech, but I did go with health tech. So doctors use this client portal software because it's HIPAA compliant, and it's frankly much more affordable than legal tech. I don't know how that managed to happen, but it is. And they do now, since I've been a subscriber of that client portal software, they have changed it so you can package and resell your client portal. So I may even give attorneys the option to just buy that from me for a one-time fee, and they could just have a subscription model sort of ready, you know, and package. I might do that in the future too. But then, you know, like to bring back up Kimberly Bennett again, you know, she created Fidu. She created a legal tech company that helps lawyers launch a subscription practice, and I think it integrates with Clio. So, you know, there's other options out there. The only reason I didn't use Kim's is because Kim's product was built around the way she envisioned the subscription model, and I envisioned it slightly differently, but at least there will be options in the market, right? So, you know, we'll see what happens. My maybe in 5 years from now, Neil, I'm going to look at something like that. Right now, I'm just trying to, I have a podcast law subscribed. I have my practice subscription attorney, and I'm just trying to focus on that right now.
Sure.
You know, so 5 years from now, we'll see if I do something like that.
Sure. Well, now we've touched a little bit on the technology that underpins all of this, and certainly to be efficient enough to make a subscription model work, you're obviously going to have to rely on some technology to leverage your capabilities. You already mentioned Calendly, your portal software, and Clio. What else do we have in the suite?
Yeah, so while I think Clio is a great product, if it makes sense for your law firm and you should be using some kind of practice management software, I don't actually use Clio, but just to make that clear, but I am familiar that Clio does integrate with Vdoo, which can help you launch a subscription, you know, for your law practice if you don't have one and you just wanted to launch one and you wanted more of a turnkey solution, right? Because the software that I use is called SuiteDash, and it's white labeled. So unless my clients listen to this episode, they would never know that SuiteDash powers my client portal, right? Because it's all my branding on it. But SuiteDash it takes a lot of time on the back end. You don't need to know how to code. It's no code tools, but I spent many weekends getting what I called my minimum viable portal, you know, MVP for those entrepreneurs listening, right? But my minimum viable portal ready. So it's more affordable, but it takes a lot more time to customize and set up. Then what I also have as a part of my tech stack is I have a professional Zoom account. I am a Google Workspace user. So instead of the Microsoft suite, I'm all in on Google. Though I, of course, have Microsoft tools available to me because if you're interacting with clients or other attorneys that use it, you got to have that too. But I'm not a 365 subscriber, though. Google pretty much integrates with everything that I'm using really well. For legal tech, the only legal tech I use is my document automation software, which is unique to Illinois lawyers. It's called FormU Law. It's through the Illinois Institute of Continuing Legal Education. It has room to grow.
Law? I think that's hysterical.
Yeah. I know.
That's a great.
I know. Oh, it's great. It's great. And I'm really pleased with it. It's the perfect software for a new solo general practitioner. It really is. And they price it right too. It's like it's $28 a month, which compared to other document automation software for the legal profession, that's unheard of, right? I mean, you're starting at $99 a month, right? For everything else.
Right.
And that's still on the low end, right? $99 a month is still on the low end for legal tech.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really pleased with the price and the product. Now, they do have room for improvement, like I was saying, but if they made all the improvements I'd like them to make, they'd have to start charging $99 a month, which at least at this point I could afford. But when I was starting out, $28 a month was very attractive, right?
Yeah.
So they know the market that they're targeting.
What about billing and money management?
Yep, that was my next one. Excellent question. I use Stripe. And so the reason I use Stripe and not Gravity Legal or LawPay is because at least at this point in my solo practice, I don't have an IOLTA account because I don't hold on to client funds that I have not earned. I simply don't do it. If a situation arises where I need to do something like that, I come up with a more creative solution. So for example, when I do my simple estate plans, if I have a feeling that my client will not pay me after I give them the estate plan, what I do is I make them have to sign into the client portal and download it. And when they sign into the client portal, they are prompted to make the payment before they're able to download it. I've set up that automation. And so I will earn, like as soon as they pay it and they download their estate plan, and I've earned the fee, right? Yeah. So like that's how I handle the one-off work. So in the future though, as I get bigger and bigger clients and I get all sorts of different types of work, I do anticipate needing to open that IOLTA account, and maybe I frankly like the way Gravity does business. And so I'm looking at Gravity Legal for that trust account solution, because I don't think Stripe is really set up for that, but I've been super happy with Stripe. It makes it really easy to get payments and recurring payments from clients. If you want to do advanced things, you do need to know how to code, but I don't do advanced things with Stripe.
Yeah.
And so that's how I power it.
It's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, listen, Matthew, this is great. I really enjoyed hearing about the subscription model and how you've applied it to your practice. As you said, you're quite open and transparent. I can't imagine that after someone goes to your website, that there's a question that they have that's not addressed there. But let's just put the URL for the website out there. It's subscriptionattorney.com, all one word, www.subscriptionattorney.com. We'll have that in the show notes. And if folks want to get a hold of you, I know you're going to be at the ABA Tech Show, right?
Oh, that's right, Neil. Thanks for reminding me. So, like, I do want to, since I know this will be going live before the tech show, I will be speaking on the subscription model on March 3rd in Chicago for the ABA Tech Show. So come to the ABA Tech Show. You could go to techshow.com, great URL that they got, and register for the event there. I'm also speaking on law in the metaverse, which, Neil, maybe we'll have to come by in the future to talk about law in the metaverse, but I'll be on a panel talking about law in the metaverse the day before on March 2nd. But there's great programming this year, Tech Show, so I highly encourage everyone go to techshow.com and purchase your tickets.
You know, I haven't signed up yet. I need to do that. I haven't been since before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to get back there because it's great fun and catching up with everyone. And, you know, just roaming the vendor floor is almost worth the price of admission. But I did see all the lineup for the speakers, and there's a slew of them and a lot of new names. I mean, one of the things that I had a bit of a complaint about in the past is that there were the same people over and over again from year to year, or a large contingent of them from year to year. I have to admit, this year's lineup, of which you are a part, has a lot of new folks, a lot of new subject areas, and I think that's reflective of the significant change in the legal space over the last couple, 3 years. So
yeah, and a lot of future guests for your podcast.
Well, that's also true. Let's be honest. So I need to get my act together and get to Chicago. So all right, Matthew. Well, thank you ever so much for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur, and I wish you the best of luck. And hopefully, I'll see you in Chicago.
Sounds great, Neil. Thanks again for having me.
Thanks so much. Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them, and I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.